In a world of weapons-grade stupidity, your defense is the truth. TNN, the Truth News Network.
Now, I didn't plan that bump in. Pete Moss said, looking at weapons-grade stupidity as an introduction to Steve Baker. But it just happened to come up in the rotation. I'm picking. Yours isn't weapons grade. It's just plain old stupidity that I share with you equally. I guess maybe.
Well, I should address that, because I will tell you what I was reading last night. This is one of my New Year's resolutions, is that every time I see a ridiculous statement or meme or relationship advice or a TikTok reel from AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I'm going to go read one of the founders' letters, one of the letters between Jefferson and Adams. And so that's one of my New Year's resolutions. And so I had to do that last night. So last night when I went to bed, I turned off all the devices because I read something from Ocasio-Cortez, Miss Cortez, and I started reading through some of the exchanges from Jefferson and Thomas. And I will tell you, Jefferson and
Adams.
And I will tell you, there is nothing more humbling, indeed humiliating, than reading the correspondence between those two men when you think you know what's going on in the world, and you think you have a decent grasp of the world, and you think you have a modicum of reasonable intelligence, and you start reading two men who start just casually speaking to each other in Greek, Latin, French, without having to translate it for each other, and then back and forth about deep histories of the world. Politics, religion, the state of affairs, and all the regions of the world at the time, what these two men were aware of, and their depth of their knowledge, the depth of their intellect, and the things that they thought were important to share in communications with one another, and these lengthy letters between the two, just makes you absolutely humble.
So what you're saying is probably neither one of those gentlemen would get engrossed in a conversation with AOC talking specifically about politics, I'm sure.
Well, it's interesting, because in some of those letters they do address some of the as they might more politely put it, some of those more intellectually inferior to themselves, who were operating within government, even in their own time when they were engaged in government before their respective retirements, they were well aware that they were above the pack.
Thomas Jefferson, I loved his writings. I read a lot of his stuff. One of the best things he ever wrote, and I'm paraphrasing it because I don't have it in front of me. He said, "If to go to heaven, if it required being in a political party, I wouldn't go to heaven." So here's a guy. I mean, I don't know anybody that was bigger or more into politics than was Thomas Jefferson. And he's just telling it all sucks.
Yeah. Oh, and one of the letters I read last night was one of his laments against the descent into party schisms. I mean, this was not just a brilliant essay on what was happening between the Tories and the Whigs and the early parties right after the founding of this country, but he was lamenting that they were on the verge of dismantling what he and Adams had put together just because of their party loyalties, and therefore the fact that they were more concerned with, just as we see today, with party lines than they are with the future, the prosperity, the direction of our country.
Hey, we saw that just play out just exactly like you described it there in this January 6th Select Committee. Why did they give it such a grandiose name? It wasn't just a committee. It was the select committee, and it was nothing more than a witch hunt. I don't want to get into all of that. I just brought it up. The real thing I want to get into is I want you to dig and give us all the skinny about this guy, Ray Epps. I told the folks that you did another Twitter dump the other night, and a bunch of them went and looked at it. And we published your screed about that dump. We published it this morning at truthnewsnet.org. And I got to be honest with you, you know, when it comes to somebody else's writing published on our website, I'm the editor. I'm the editor-in-chief.
Right.
I'm the editor. And in your first sentence, I had to edit your first sentence. You got to understand, you've forgotten. You came up in the South. You came up in Louisiana. You grew up in the church. You don't write the words, damn it. You don't use the word damn. There is a really good replacement that's a four-letter word. It's called darn. So I replaced you. I edited you. Don't get your feelings hurt.
But the word I used was biblical, and darn it isn't.
There you go. There you go.
That's all I can say about that.
Yeah.
So Ray Epps is back in the news again, and nothing would please me more, Dan, if I never had to say that name, read that name, or write about that name again.
Oh, my God.
He's an unbelievable figure. When I say unbelievable, he's an unbelievable in terms of the story surrounding him, both the story that he has created about himself, the story that has been shared in mainstream media, and of course, obviously, the story that has been now propagated and perpetuated by the unselect committee. Let's call them the unselect committee because they were unselected. This is the first time in the history of our republic that the opposition party was disallowed by the leadership of the majority party to seat their own members on a committee. And that was in the case of this. That's how important it was for this party. And let's just call her out by name. This was that important for Ms. Nancy Pelosi to, in her own words, and I quote, to establish and preserve the narrative of January 6th. I don't need to parse that out too specifically, do I? To establish and preserve the narrative of January 6th.
I got a text.
That's why it was so important for them to seat their own choices on this committee.
I got a text early this morning from the West Coast from Peter Lloyd, and it was kind of cute. He said, we need to change her name. She's no longer going to be the House Speaker. We just need to call her Miss Information.
Myth information.
Yeah. Everybody would know you're talking about Nancy.
Yeah.
Get back to Ray Epps.
I'll just go with, Well, this guy is back in the news again, and he's trending, as they say, as the kids say today, because the Unselect Committee released transcripts. They did a dump of roughly 140 transcripts from that. And by the way, when you click on those transcripts this morning, you can no longer access them. You could only access them for a few days. There's been, I'm taking a long path to get to Ray Epps, but I think that this is important for your listeners to hear. There were roughly somewhere in the vicinity of 1,200 views by the House Select Committee, or interviews rather, 1,200 individuals that they interviewed. They have only released into the public sphere about 140 of those transcripts, entire transcripts of those interviews of the 1,200.
Well, that's because of misinformation.
That's right. That's right. Myth Pelosi. And because of that, there's a unique rule that when these committees do not release these interviews, these transcripts into the public, after the committee is dissolved, they automatically are transferred to the National Archive, where at the minimum, it can take 20 years before they're released to the public. And if they're marked sensitive, as long as 50 years before they're released. This morning, with the transfer of the House, once the previous Congress was dissolved, and that's what they do every 2 years, actually dissolve the previous Congress, and then they reinstitute it again with a new vote as they swear in the new members, and that's what happened today. Well, with the dissolution of the previous Congress, those files disappeared this morning. I went to click on one to read this morning in my continued effort to understand all that's been going on in this process, and they have already been archived. I couldn't even access them this morning. I'm sure because they were out there, somebody has put them in as archived them. I'll be able to find them, but they're no longer available on the government's own website. So there you go. That's something that everyone needs to know, is that these records now are most of them were never released. So it's possible we won't see them for decades, which is unthinkable in a free speech, open society like we are supposed to be.
We shouldn't even question or get surprised when these kind of things happen, because on the left, and there may be some of it to some extent on the right, but really on the left all the time, they don't feel like they need to let the American people have access to anything and everything. After all, they've subscribed to the thought process that it's not government of, by, and for the people, it's government of, by, and for the government. And they're the government, therefore they can do anything they want. They can say anything they want. And if you disagree, you just need to go sit down and shut up.
Well, the thing about Ray Epps, and the reason why he popped on all of our radar screens late last year, was, well, for some of us, he popped up a little bit earlier because we were aware that early on in the process of the FBI and other agencies tracking down the January 6th offenders, that there were, and still are, there are multiple lists online of people looking for as yet unidentified persons that were either involved in violence or property destruction or just were trespassing. And that, you know, that these lists are long. The FBI actually maintains their own website for FBI most wanted January 6th persons. And then there are other independent agencies. One, the most popular is called the Sedition Hunters. And this is ostensibly a private group, but we're pretty well convinced that they are also a Fed-funded organization. But this FBI website, and this is government, this is the FBI, they deleted quite a few people from their most wanted list July 1st of last year. They were on there now, and then they were just suddenly gone. Well, Ray Epps was number 16. He wasn't, you know, far down. He wasn't number 2000 on the list. He was number 16 on the most wanted list for January 6th offenses, because he has been, as we've all seen, he's been caught on video. He was captured on video, rather, being very vocal about calling people to go into the Capitol, both on the evening of January 5th there in BLM Square in Washington, D.C., and then on the morning of the rally at the Ellipse, he was pointing toward the Capitol and showing people where to go and says, this is where we need to go. As soon as the speech is over, we've got to go to the Capitol. Now, interestingly, Ray Epps didn't wait till the speech. Part of his story is that he went to D.C. with his son to see Trump's speech, but Ray Epps didn't attend Trump's speech. As a matter of fact, Ray Epps was standing on the front line of the first two battle line breaches, and he participated in those breaches, and he was there when they happened. And in both of those breaches, this is another thing that the NSM is very hesitant to share with the American public, is that both of those battle line breaches, barricade breaches, and the second one was a police line, is that both of those happened long before Trump even concluded his remarks down at the Ellipse. So there was actively something going on. There was something organized up at the Capitol that day, and Epps was right in the middle of it. So the fact that he was caught on video, not only encouraging people to go to the Capitol and indeed go into the Capitol, he was also captured on video at both of those barricade breaches. And so with all of this information available to the public, those of us that were following it early, we knew who Epps was, and then with the deletion of his name and photo from the FBI files on July 1st of last of 2021, not last year. I forget we're in 2023 now, but in 2021, and then the subsequent explosion of information about Epps because a online news source called Revolver did an expository video compilation on Epps particularly, and kind of exploded from there, and he became well known. And so the accusation from that point forward was is that the right wing had created this conspiracy theory around this innocent guy from Arizona and turning him into some sort of FBI confidential human source or a federal plant or something of that nature. And so that's what happened. And immediately the mainstream press came to his defense. I began writing articles, and suddenly one of the most unique things that happened in happens in these weird times that we inhabit right now, Dan, is that somehow, some way, this guy who was a former Marine, B, a former Oath Keeper, C, a guy who claims that he was not only a Trump supporter, but he was a Trump supporter and an election denier. He was opposed to the election results in 2020. And there were so many other things in his story that should have made him a pariah, should have made him kryptonite to the American left, particularly to the American left-wing media, particularly to the Democratic Party itself. And suddenly he became a protectee of those people. And the MSM started writing apologetics articles defending him and covering for him. And suddenly the House Select Committee brings him in, and they have two interviews with him in which they throw him 97 pages worth of softball questions and kid glove handling to the extent of, as I described it in my article that you posted on your website, and thank you for that. Even with the editing out the biblical word, the fact is that they actually treated him as though he was the star witness in a trial, and he was under direct examination by his own attorney, and the attorney was offering him leading questions so that he could then be led into the appropriate and correct answer that they needed to get on the record for the trial. And when you read that transcript, that's exactly what happened. Well, New Year's Day, I downloaded the transcript. You could still access the files on the government website at that time. New Year's Day, I got my cup of coffee, my cigar. We had a warm day here in North Carolina. I sat out on my porch. I downloaded the transcript and I started reading, and I got to page 35 before I hit the wall, and my blood was boiling.
It took you that long?
It didn't. I mean, I was already well aware of what was developing. I was extremely aware of, as I said, this leading question. And by the way, because the Select Committee is not a trial per se. There's no cross examination. There's no objections coming from the other side saying, objection, leading question, Your Honor, sustained. None of that's going on. So these committee members appointed by Nancy Pelosi herself, including the Republicans, Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney. Now, Cheney wasn't in on this particular interview, but Kinzinger played a large role in it. And at one point, by the time I got to page 35, he basically said to him, he said, so you really weren't aware that when you were saying to people that they need to go into the Capitol, that the Capitol was actually closed during this time because of the ongoing COVID restrictions. And of course, Epps said, no, I wasn't aware of that at the time. And to make this brief for this broadcast here and for your listeners, the punchline was that Kinzinger says, you know, I think that in any other given year, it would have been open. I think that's important to note. So thank you. And he literally answers the question for him and puts it on the record for everyone to know that, well, you know, Epps just thought that the Capitol was open. And that's important to note. Thank you for your answers, Mr. Epps.
There are so many other things about Ray Epps that there are all kinds of questions. None of them have been answered. And you just hit on what's happening as of today. All this stuff is disappearing. Who is Ray Epps?
I'm willing to say I don't know, Dan. I'm always willing to start from that perspective, start from that point of reference. I am myself. You can't help but be suspicious. This is why I said, and I've written this over and over the last year, is I've written that Ray Epps, the conspiracy theory around that Ray Epps was not created by the right wing or by the MAGA crowd. The conspiracy theory was created by the government itself.
Absolutely.
When you take the guy off the FBI list without notifying anybody and without any explanation, and then you interview the guy twice on this, you know, this glorified committee, and then you don't release the transcripts from the interview for a year. The first one has never been released. The one I was reading from on New Year's Day was the second interview. We've never seen the first interview. The second interview was released here 11 and a half months after the interview actually took place. That's how long they sat on it. But as soon as his interview was over back in January of 2022, a year after the January 6th event, when his interview was over, this committee just said, oh, yeah, we asked him the questions, and we asked him if he was a Fed. He said no, and we believe him. All right, case closed. That was it. Once again, you don't get to be the government and do that and handle it and answer it in that manner and not create the conspiracy theory yourself.
Well, there is plenty of fuel for that fire. You know, I've followed everything that you've written. I saw many of the videos that you took that day, and of course they were spread all over the world. You got in trouble with the FBI, still may be in trouble with the FBI because those videos were used by major networks around the world. And the Epps persona, it keeps coming up over and over and over again. I've watched it. This is one of those situations where, you know, I'm a journalist too, and normally you can dig and dig and dig and you can say, well, it may be this, but it might be this. And like you, you got to start somewhere and begin to build the facts before you come up with the conclusion. But every time I did that with Ray Epps, I always got to a question mark. It seemed in many respects that he was a government plant. And then you could look at the things, some of the things he did, some of the video and some of the things that he said caught on these videos, and you could say he may have been a right-wing plant. But he is the question mark that I think now, and tell me if I'm wrong, Steve, but I think now we'll never know everything about Ray Epps, who he is, what he was doing, and who, if anybody, he was doing it for that day.
We're not going to know unless somebody breaks him. And that may only happen by the political pressure around exactly what I wrote about in this article. And I encourage everybody to click on your website and go read this article that you posted this morning. Because what made my blood boil after reading this line of questioning from Adam Kinzinger of Mr. Epps was the fact that basically Kinzinger, as a representative of the United States government, a representative of Pelosi's establish and preserve the narrative objective of the committee itself, a representative of all that was wrong with the prosecutions that are taking place of innocent individuals. I'm not forgiving those who did violence by any means, but of those who did no violence whatsoever, who wandered into restricted areas after the barricades had been removed, after the area closed signs had been hidden by provocateurs, we've seen that on video as well, after the police had retreated, after the doors had been opened from the inside, many thousands of innocent people entered those restricted spaces. And they had no visual clues whatsoever. And depending upon where you were on that massive complex, that property, that's huge for those who have never been to the Capitol before. It is a huge property. And if you were on what was considered to be those restricted areas at the time, now the government has allocated through that horrific, satanic $1.7 trillion omnibus bill that you and I spoke of last week or a couple of weeks ago. It buried in that, one of the other things is a $200+ million budget increase for the Department of Justice, because they needed that, requested that, and asked for that so that they could go after an additional 2,000 individuals who innocently wandered onto the Capitol grounds that day. So they're extending that perimeter of charging people with crimes, not just to those who went inside the building or did violence with law enforcement or broke things, but they're extending that perimeter of people that they want to arrest out onto the Capitol grounds itself. The difference between those individuals that I'm talking about and the hundreds who have already been charged, arrested, and prosecuted, and now some have spent time in prison, is that Ray Epps was on the front line where he could see the barricade. He could see them being guarded by police. He could see the actual posted area closed signs that were affixed to those barricades long before Trump ever finished his remarks down at the Ellipse. And he was there when they were shoved over, when Capitol Police officers were attacked, and then he broke in a dead run to the next battle line. And he wants to tell us that he's an innocent man.
All the while, he was encouraging people around him, telling them, mm-hmm. go into the Capitol. Go into the Capitol.
Yeah. And so when the government does not charge that guy with a crime, but charges an innocent grandmother who had cancer, 69 years old, puts her in prison for 60 days for a misdemeanor charge called parading. Well, first of all, should go back to the beginning. The first thing that they do is they do an FBI SWAT raid on your house. They kick your door or knock on your door at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning in the dark. You respond at the door, and as soon as you open the door, you see a bunch of red laser dots on your chest and on your forehead. And you're in your nightgown or your underwear or whatever the case may be. And then they pull you out into the cold of the morning, put you on the ground, handcuff you, haul you off for a misdemeanor, Dan. And in this case, I was just referring to a 69-year-old grandmother who carried a Trump flag through an open door. She didn't see any violence. She didn't participate in any violence. The door was open when she got there, and she walked through like so many other hundreds did before her. And she walked through with a Trump flag, but because she was carrying that flag, they got her on a charge of something called parading inside a restricted space. And she spent 2 months in prison without her cancer treatments.
Steve, you and I have watched things like this happen, like that 69-year-old grandmother. Happen throughout our years as being in journalism. We've seen it happen. But we've never seen it happen in the United States of America. We That's see right. it happening today in Iran. We see it happening in Moscow. And we even see it mm-hmm. happening in Beijing. But now yeah. we're seeing it happen in Washington, D.C., that's supposed to be the bed of democracy for the whole world. And they are aggressively, with no hidden reasoning at all. It's all out there. They don't care what Americans think about what they do. The government is going to do it because they're the government. And the American people were good for two things. One, voting for Democrats, and two, sending tax dollars to Washington, D.C. Where are we going?
You know, I'll go back to something that we were talking about at the very beginning of this call, and that was me reading those letters and exchanges between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. And one of those letters, Jefferson talks about, and he talks to Adams about their repaired friendship, because there was a schism in their friendship shortly after Jefferson was, Thomas Jefferson succeeded Adams for the presidency. Adams was the second president, and he only served a 4-year term because his friend, Thomas Jefferson, ran against him and beat him. And there was a schism in the relationship. And these many years later, when they repaired their relationship and became regular correspondents, Jefferson was talking about that signing of the Declaration of Independence and that constitution that was established. And he mentions in his letter to his friend John Adams, and he says, even though you and I have specific differences about that imperfect document, he calls it an imperfect document, he said it is still the best document that the sun has anywhere shone upon in history.
And that's still true today.
It's still true today. And the point he was making is we have left it in the care of that next generation behind those of us who signed to those documents. And he said, all we can do is hope that they will take care of it in the manner in which it was given to them, which we intended. And unfortunately, here we are nearly 250 years later, and we're seeing that the care for the intentions of the founding and of the scribing of those documents are being abandoned completely. We had a Department of Justice, a system of justice that was the envy of the entire world after the establishment of our republic. And now when I look at the Department of Justice, I see nothing but a Soviet-style system of predetermined outcomes. And that's exactly, and it's predetermined both ways. I watched a predetermined outcome unfold before my very eyes over 9 weeks in the Oath Keepers trial, and I'm watching a predetermined outcome take place in the handling of the same government of Ray Epps, because they have already predetermined that he's not going to face the Piper. He's not going to face charges. He's not going to face a SWAT raid at 6 a.m. in the morning. And he's not going to spend time in prison for some reason. And they won't answer that question. Why, when he has done so much more than so many others who have been prosecuted, why is he being handled with such kid gloves? That there is no other conclusion but for a reasonable person to go, well, he's working for them, or at least was on that day. I mean, where else am I to go? I mean, show me where I'm wrong, but I've been studying this for 2 years now.
We're both from Louisiana. We're both from Louisiana. And one thing we learned when I was really young down here, came from South Louisiana, we duck hunted. And I learned very young that if it quacks and it waddles, it's always a duck. And I hate to end this conversation with such a trite little joke, but hey, I mean, when you look at, and here we are, we're both intelligent men. I mean, we've got a lot of years behind us and we've made some good decisions in our life and we've made some bad decisions in our life. But we've seen a lot of things, and we have the gift of discernment simply because we grew up when you could tell what was right, you could tell what was wrong, yeah. But it's so blurred now that we're pointed at a situation where purposely it's blurred, and they're going to try to keep it blurred. But if you uncover the reality of what's going on, they don't even care anymore. You know why?
Yeah.
Because you can't do anything about it. Yeah. That's sad. Hey, listen, buddy, I hate to end on this sad note, but it's true. All you're talking about, all you've been sharing with us are facts, and we've just got to find a way to swallow those facts and not let fear overtake us. But what we can do, and this is what we talk about here all the time, and what you do too, get involved. Call your members of your district, your house district, call them and talk to them about specific things. You may, and you probably aren't going to get them on the phone, but you'll get an aide in their office. Get their texts, get their emails. I'll tell you this, every member of the House of Representatives, they have a text number that you can text your thoughts to, and it's not directly to their phones. But they don't talk about that. But you can find out what that number is. And somebody in that office is going to read what you say. Don't be snotty. Don't be ugly. Don't be real lengthy. Be factual and call them to account for the things they're doing and the things they're not doing. If everybody listening today would do that exact thing in your congressional district, I got to be honest with you, Mike Johnson's my congressman, the 4th Congressional District here. You hear him on this show all the time, but I can tell you this, he's a registered Republican, the number 4 Republican in power in the House of Representatives. I'm a registered independent, and we get into it with each other because I don't just agree hook, line, and sinker with his political philosophies, nor are he mine. That's okay. That's okay. What we've got to do is give them the understanding that we, the people, are still in charge, and we want them to represent us as we have elected them all to do. If we don't do that very little simple thing, it's just going to slide downhill further and faster than we ever thought it could. Steve, I am glad you're out there. I'm glad you're bringing us all these things that are critical for us to see and to understand and get the information on. Ray Epps' name is going to be emblazoned on all of our hearts. And here we are today, the 3rd of January. We still don't know who the heck Ray Epps is.
No, we really don't. But somebody's going to find out one day.
So yeah.
That's my goal. That's my positive spin on it, is that there's a lot of people like myself out there looking and overturning these stones and looking underneath them. I think we're going to get to the bottom of a lot of this.
I hope you're the guy that finds it out. I can't wait.
That would be that would be life-changing for myself if happened.
Sure. Steve Baker, thank you for coming here every week. We love what you do. Keep us informed, and you are digging every day. Any new stuff you get, let us know, buddy.
Thanks, Dan, and Happy New Year to you and all.
Same to you, buddy. Have a great one. Steve Baker, oh my gosh. He does a lot of work, and it's got to trouble him. If it was me, I'd be worried all the time.
He'll never let you fall to the lies. Your bulwark against the tide of fake news. Dan Newman, TNN,
the Truth News Network.
What is Coca-Cola? Is it an excuse to get together? Since 1886, Coca-Cola has been passing on smiles from generation to generation. We've been giving kids scholarships.
Like the early birds and the all-nighters.
And you get to enjoy what matters most. Coca-Cola. Drink up.
Well, I've been watching the news to see how it's going in D.C. It's 11:39 Eastern Time. And we know the House is getting together. They've got to seat the new members. In fact, everybody has to raise their hand and pledge their oath to the United States to serve. But the new ones are being sworn in today, but they can't do any business until they choose their leader. And if you were with us early on the first hour, we discussed at length some of the headwinds that Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy has. He's got to get through them and by all of the roadblocks there to become the House Speaker, even though he's been the odds-on favorite until recently. As of this morning, I counted 15 Republicans in the House, 15 Republicans that say they're not going to support Kevin McCarthy. So that process will just go. There'll be a ballot. If no leader is chosen, there'll be somebody else that's nominated for consideration, and then there'll be a ballot. We could be days being there. And here's the dangerous thing about this. We all know all of the things that you've heard right here on the show, Congressman Mike Johnson. He gave us a laundry list of things that they have been structuring, planning, implementing, getting ready to go. All they needed was to get sworn into office, and they're going to start these investigations. They're going to begin holding the left accountable in specific ways for a specific wrongdoing, and they're going to work their butts off, but they can't even begin that process until they get today behind them and pick a leader. We've got 20 minutes left on this show. Between now and then, I'll keep looking just to see if they made any progress on that. I don't keep a monitor in the studio, television monitor. I don't know why I don't. I didn't purposely think about it, but maybe I ought to do that. Something very critical is coming up, and we very seldom talk about gubernatorial races. But in off years, there are states, several states, that operate their gubernatorial races in the off years. Three states in the South are going to hold gubernatorial races this November, excluding any potential special elections for any vacated seats, all of which could serve as previews of the 2024 presidential election. The three states, Kentucky, Mississippi, and my state, Louisiana, are going to hold off-year gubernatorial elections in November. The last regular gubernatorial elections for all three states were in 2019, 1 year before the previous presidential election. John Bel Edwards, governor here, he's term limited. That means he cannot run for another term, leaving the door open for a crowded field, while both Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves, a Republican, and Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, a Democrat, are eligible to run for re-election. In Kentucky, Beshear is running for re-election after he won his last election with less than 50% of the vote, and he ran against former Governor Matt Bevin, who was a Republican. The Democrat incumbent's running in a state that former President Trump won by over 25 points in 2020, Kentucky. Some Republicans seeking to challenge the Democrat incumbent are State Attorney General Daniel Cameron, State Agriculture Commissioner Ryan Quarles, State Auditor Mike Harmon, former United Nations Ambassador Kelly Kraft, who served under Trump. The GOP gubernatorial primary is set to take place in just a few months, May 16th. Former Democrat congressional candidate Jeff Young is also running to be the state's governor. Kentucky's general election is set for November 7th. Here in my state, because Edwards won his second term as governor in 2019, he can't run for re-election. And we call our primary a jungle primary. A jungle primary. What does that mean? It means that every candidate is going to compete in the primary coming up on October 14th, regardless of their party affiliation. There are no party primaries. If a candidate receives at least 50% of the vote, that candidate is the winner. If not, the two top candidates with the most votes move to a runoff election in November, November 18th. Who's the favorite right now? Well, it looks like State Attorney General Jeff Landry, who's a Republican, is so far the only Republican candidate that has announced a run, while other Republicans are expected to join sooner or later. One of them, by the way, may be one of my favorite U.S. senators, John Kennedy. He's the spokesman. I mean, he is a spokesman. I love to hear his interviews. I love to see in House committee sessions when they're interviewing people for various posts to be hopefully confirmed for in the presidential administration. He just has a flowery way of putting it. He, I think, would have a real go at it. But I hate to see him leave the Senate to be a governor. Also out there, Billy Nungesser, who's the lieutenant governor, our other senator, Bill Cassidy, who's a Republican, and several others. No Democrats have officially joined. Reeves in Mississippi, he's eligible for another term after he won his last one with about 52% of the vote in 19. He appears to be running again, although he is yet to make an official announcement. Those three states. Now, why did I go into this? Is it a big deal? Yeah, it's really a big deal. And it's time to start thinking about it. governors, they play a heavy role, not just in the things that happen within their states, but all 50 governors are heavily involved in shaping the political climate for the entire nation. We've got 50 pieces of American citizens. And within those states' people are really seriously responsible and involved in all of the governing processes. And our forefathers, you heard Steve talking about Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, our former presidents. And in their writings, you can find out how heavily involved they were committed to states' governments. In fact, those 13 colonies that were the first founded before any kind of federal government, there were a lot of people that said, we don't need a federal government. We just need to remain independent entities, political entities, and work together, but we don't need a federal government. And the state operations are still critical to what happens here in the United States. What else is going on that you need to know about? Well, what about all this Biden spending? We just got that omnibus bill shoved down our throats. Conservatives did. Conservatives didn't shove it down our throats. They shoved it down. They being the left shoved it down. Conservatives / Republicans down our throats. And folks, I got to be honest with you. Joe Biden's got 2 years left. He is just now beginning to spend. There's more on the way, I can promise you.
I want to get your reaction to all of this spending.
Well, $6 trillion is a lot of money. Let's start with that. And so I've never seen anything like this. And I've been in this town for 30 years doing federal fiscal policy. I think Biden is probably the most financially reckless president we've had, at least in your or my lifetime. Now, you can't blame this one, though, Edward, on just, you know, Joe Biden and Schumer and Pelosi, because the Republicans were in on this heist. I mean, half of the Republicans in the Senate voted for this bill, which was what brought it up over the top. And I got to tell you, just from a political perspective, you know, I've never seen conservatives and donors and voters so angry at the Republicans for making this deal. I think it was bad for the economy and even worse for the party.
Well, and I want to ask you, so the Green New Deal they talked about was $7 trillion in spending.
Yep.
So now the president, as you mentioned, has almost $6 trillion mm-hmm. in spending that he's done. Has their agenda just succeeded?
You mean
the Democrats? Yeah, the Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone would have ever imagined. Look, they saw COVID as an opportunity to really open the door for every kind of a Pandora's box of liberal programs, including what you just said, Edward, was this massive green energy, Green New Deal. And so they used COVID as an excuse for this massive spending binge. The real challenge now, in my opinion, as we head into 2023, is how do we drain all of that money out of the economy? I mean, you just mentioned the Home Depot former president.
The co-founder, Marcus.
Bernie Marcus. And he's exactly right. We've put so much money into people's hands. Just, I call it helicopter money, right. Dropping $100 bills out of windows. It's been really difficult for businesses still to this day, 3 years after COVID hit, to get workers back on the job because we're paying them not to work.
Right. So the Federal Reserve has had to raise interest rates. All of this spending, almost $6 trillion, is that a headwind to what the Federal Reserve is trying to do?
You better believe it is. I mean, I was nominated to be on the Fed by Trump. I didn't make it through the process. But boy, do they have a tough job ahead because now you have to pull back on that money. The Fed has been completely behind the curve on this, by the way. I mean, remember this time last year, Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, was saying that that inflation was going to be transitory. Well, it turned out not to be transitory. The good news is, as you know, we've gotten it down from 9.1% this summer in terms of the inflation rate to 7.1% now. So that's some improvement, okay, because energy
prices. There are cheers from the White House.
Exactly.
But 7% inflation is a huge pain and burden on the American consumer.
And it's a long way. You're exactly right. I mean, and by the way, food prices are still rising. You've reported on this really at a very rapid pace. The hard part is ahead. You know, go to 9 to 7% isn't so tough. But remember, the inflation target for the Fed is 2%. That's where we need to be, 2%. That's a long way down. So the idea that the Fed has to be done with raising rates is simply not true. They're going to have to do at least two more, but they need help from Congress, Edward. That's, I think, your point. If you've got the Fed spending, federal government spending all this money, the Fed has to keep trying to raise the rates to sop that money up.
So has it prolonged those rate increases or made more of them because of the government spending?
Oh, no question about it. So you got the Fed trying to take the money out of the economy. And what's Congress doing, Edward? They're putting more money into the economy. They're acting at cross purposes. And I think it's going to take both. I think it's going to take Fed rate increases, and it's going to take some real, you got to start to take a chainsaw out of this budget. I've recommended the Republicans in the House. I met with them last week. You got to take about $1 trillion out of this budget. Now, that sounds like a lot of money. But compared to $6 trillion, it ain't that much.
Right. So look into 2023. I'm going to get two predictions for the market. So you're sitting here a year from now. What do you think will...
Number one, I'm going to tell you, all your viewers, I don't think that the Fed is going to come anywhere close to getting back to the 2% target of Fed. So I think inflation is going to come down, Edward, but I don't think we're going to see inflation anywhere new. I think we'll be at the 4 to 5 to 6% range, which is still a big burden to consumers. Now, the good news is I do think you're going to see by the second half of this year, I think we're going to come out of this economic malaise that we've been in now for the last 2 years. Remember, the first half of 2022, we were in a recession. I think we could be in a recession in the first half of 2023, but I think by the second half of the year, hopefully we'll come out of this.
Well, let's hope. Steve Moore, I appreciate your time. Thank you. In person.
Good to see you. Not in front of the White House for once.
Not in front of the White House. Thank you, Steve Moore.
You know, all the speculation in the world about what we're going to do, what our leaders are going to do, it means nothing if we don't have any kind of confidence that the stuff that made this nation so great continues and it's under attack. Let me give you some examples. Last week, leftists and those rhino Republicans admitted under oath that they changed the print settings on election morning on some printers in Arizona, so Republican votes would not be tabulated. On the one day, most Republicans vote, and the Maricopa County judge said, quote, it wasn't intentional. A Republican governor candidate who easily won by multiple points was denied her rightful election. Several million Arizona voters were disenfranchised. Not a word from Republican leaders. Wake up, America. Leftists and rhinos spent the last 40 years owning our election machinery to end your right to vote, and they're about to finish the job. This week, the governor of Minnesota took the lead by planning to register automatically, folks, teenagers who are not old enough to vote. On election day, there'll be tens of thousands of names with little or no history who can be voted by election commissions when needed. Democrats are proposing laws making it a felony to question an election. Of course they are. Breitbart News, Fox News, and about every other mainstream-controlled opposition is cowed into submission about this. Election commissions regularly add to election rolls automatically. Every person using any state service, even if that person hasn't requested to be an elector. Your illegal migrant getting welfare or a driver's license can be automatically added to the state rolls. What could go wrong there, right? So while all of this is happening, hapless Republicans claim to have found the secret to election victory. And you know what it is? Get better at ballot harvesting or gathering. I've heard probably 24 heavyweights in media and in politics saying, you know, the only way we're going to be Democrats is to do what they do, but do it better than they do it. This is the Republican Party that should provide pushback against industrial-scale, sovereign voter fraud. Unfortunately, they see the problem of floating ballots. They do not see or do not choose to see the problem of ever-expanding voter rolls with people who never chose to vote and many who had no legal right to vote. Working with Mike Lindell, currently the voter rolls for a dozen states have the data for several more. In every case, the number of voter registration anomalies is from 5% to almost 20% of the voter roll. Now, use the term, a voter anomaly. Try the 41 voters registered in a hotel in Missouri. How about the registered voters in the Harris County, Texas prison? Examples are so numerous, there's a website you can go to cover them. Omega4American.com. When most, probably all, states have a float of anomalies in voters from 5 to almost 20%, an election commission can control the election outcome for any close elections. Elections are mostly close today. Hey, nothing changes if nothing changes. We the people have got to stand up and initiate the stuff that will initiate the changes. Thank you for being here today. We'll be back tomorrow, the 4th. I hope you're having a good week. And I want to say always, thank you for being part of Truth News Network.
Real truth, real news, TNN, the Truth News Network.